27 minutes now to 9 the time. Good morning to you. Time for your mediated conversation this Wednesday morning. You'd forgotten it was Wednesday. More and more economists are warning that many people will lose their jobs as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown. Already the CCMA has said that it's bracing itself for a wave of retrenchments as companies say they won't be able to employ as many workers as they do now. In the aviation sector, SAA, SA Express, Comair, all in business rescue or provisional liquidation, the restaurant industry has told you how they're in an incredibly difficult position. They don't know when they'll be allowed to reopen. 700,000 people work in that sector. They may not be working in that sector after this virus. So then, what are the measures around retrenchment? How does the process work? What was the situation before all of this started? And what are your rights? That is your mediated conversation this morning. First, you'll hear from the Statistician General. He's also the head of Statistics South Africa, Rasinga Maluleke. We'll ask him. He'll explain how many people were already losing their jobs before this hit. They've also conducted an online survey. We'll ask what evidence and data are coming from that. Then we'll speak to Tabang Rapoleng, a director at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr's employment practice, and Puku Masaramule is a labor lawyer from Masaramule Attorneys. We start then with the Statistician General, Rasinga Maluleke. Mr. Maluleke, good morning and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Steve, and again, good morning to the SAF listeners.
I do want to start with where we were before COVID-19 hit us. What was the situation regarding our labor force? Were people beginning to lose their jobs before this started?
Generally, for more than a decade, we have been having unemployment going beyond 20%. And here we are talking about the official unemployment rate, which is a narrow definition of only those who are actively looking for employment 4 weeks in a row for 4 days in that week. So if we look at that, by the last measurement, we were sitting at 6.7 million people unemployed. Those people accounted for 29.1% of the labor force. And then from there, we also had another 2.9 million who were not actively looking for employment, the discouraged work seekers. We also had another 900,000 who didn't look for employment for whatever reason, but who said if employment came, they would take it. And when you combine all those people from the 6.7 million, we are sitting at 10.4 million. And that is in the excess of 38% of the expanded unemployment rate. So that's where we were before COVID-19. Our economy had gone on 2 quarters of contraction, which led us to a recession. So we were already on recession and unemployment set in those regions.
Okay. At this stage, are there any hard and fast numbers on the number of companies that you're expecting to be closing down? I mean, I imagine you haven't got any of that data sort of in terms of formal surveys, but are you aware of hard and fast numbers on that yet?
We did a convenience survey where we sent out our questionnaire over the web and of course, using telephone facilities, largely for companies whose emails we have, or for companies whose telephones we have, the majority of them we have, but people, because they haven't been going to work and operating and working from home, some responded, some didn't respond. But as of the 14th of April to the 30th of April, we picked up that about 55% of the companies indicated that they will not survive beyond 1 and 3 months. And that indicates that if companies don't survive, we are likely to see unemployment rising. But we can't say yet. We are yet to go and measure. And when we measure, remember, we measure the economy and unemployment every quarter. So in this business survey on the impact of COVID-19, we wanted to understand what is sustaining in the interim. And indeed, today, we will release another one of our surveys, or a convenience survey, which is in the interim on the impact of employment in relation to COVID-19. So later today, we should be able to see what is happening, while we will still come back at the end of this quarter, the second quarter of 2019, later in July, and report on our quarterly measurements. So these are interim measures that we are using to keep the public of South Africa informed.
Either way, and I realize you don't do predictions, you do hard facts. That's your job as the statistician general. But if we look at the trends, we're going to see a lot more people unemployed than we had before this, and we had a big problem before this.
Steve, you have asked me this question before, and I've always told you that my sangoma doesn't allow me to predict. But certainly, we do expect that we still have to go and measure the magnitude of such job losses.
Sir, I do appreciate the time. Thank you. Rusengo Maluleke is the Statistician General, Head of Statistics South Africa, on your radio this morning, starting your mediated conversation on the issue of retrenchments. 21 minutes now to 9 the time. Tabang Rapoleng is the Director in the Employment Practice for Cliff Def Decker Hofmeyr, a law firm. Tabang, good morning. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Stephen.
Under what conditions is a company allowed to retrench workers?
Well, Stephen, the company can retrench workers if it is faced with operational requirements that calls upon it to retrench workers. When we speak to operational requirements, these vary from economic considerations, for example, the company going through financial problems or losing clients and so on, as it is currently happening, to technological advances where you find that the company is introducing new equipment or technology as a result of it, it will require less employees. But currently what we are seeing is that more and more companies are facing financial strain and are considering retrenchments on grounds of economic reasons more than anything else.
Do they have to prove the economic strain? In other words, does a company have to prove to anyone that it can't continue to employ the number of workers that it employs at the moment?
Well, on the notice that the company will issue to the employees, that's the Section 189 notice, the company will need to at least outline its rationale, its business case as to why is it saying it's going through economic challenges, outline it, and the employees, in terms of that consultation process, they may require more documents or more evidence to that effect. But besides that, when the process is challenged externally, it becomes quite difficult for someone who sits as a commissioner, for example, to question the reasons of the company if it's saying we are going through economic challenges. In most cases, you find that when these things are challenged externally, the main issue becomes about the process that has been followed, more than the reasons for the retrenchments themselves.
Okay, so you don't find many cases where someone comes and says, no, this company is making a profit, you could keep going as you are. That just doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah, the thing is, you are even allowed to restructure your business to maximize your profits. So it does not follow that the mere fact that you are making a profit, therefore you are barred from doing a retrenchment. You are not.
Okay, so when a company wants to retrench workers, where does it start? And in the news, we always hear of the Section 189. What does the process spell out?
Well, in terms of that particular process, Section 189 of the Labor Relations Act, the process starts when the company contemplates a retrenchment, and the company will have to issue what we call a Section 189 notice. This is a notice whereby basically the company is inviting employees to a consultation process. And in terms of what the notice needs to address, those are the issues that are outlined in the legislation itself, Section 189, where it needs to tell the employee of the reasons for the contemplated retrenchments. It needs to outline other issues, such as, for example, alternatives that the company will have considered, and other methods which the company is putting forward to assist employees, issues about severance pay, how much severance pay is being put on the table, and so on. And in most cases, you'll find that it also addresses issues such as company inviting some of the employees to take voluntary retrenchments and so on. So the process is is outlined in Section 189, and it basically involves a consultation process, and it should be a meaningful consultation process, meaning the company should come to the table with a view of outlining its reasons to the employees, but also being open to being persuaded by the employees' representatives of other issues that they might not have considered or fully explored, such as alternatives to avoid retrenchments. And depending on whether or not you are dealing with a normal retrenchment or a large-scale retrenchment, the process tends to differ. In terms of a large-scale retrenchment that is regulated by Section 189, Capital A of the Labor Relations Act, there is a need to undergo a facilitation process, a 60-day facilitation process, where a facilitator needs to be appointed to help the parties during the consultation process. But that requirement you will not find in what I may term a small-scale retrenchment, but for large-scale retrenchments, there is that additional burden. So in the main, the process outlines a meaningful consultation process.
A meaningful consultation process, Tabang. I mean, does it happen often that a company says we want to retrench these workers, they go through the consultation process and change their minds? I mean, I would imagine you would like to think any company that's relatively well run would have thought long and hard before even starting a process, and they would know what they need to do.
Well, because in that process, it tends to also become a bargaining process where there's a give and take. Sometimes you find that when the employees come to the table, they are willing to sacrifice some of their benefits. For example, you find that employees might say, no, I'm willing to sacrifice to lose out a benefit instead of losing work. Or you find that employees come to the table willing to say they are willing to work lesser hours as opposed to their normal working hours in order to minimize the number of retrenchments. So in most cases, it will not do away with the need to retrench, but it might assist, and it tends to assist in terms of minimizing the number of affected employees.
Then the issue of a retrenchment package, is that mandatory? Do you have to be paid a retrenchment package?
Well, in terms of the law, the employer must pay a severance package, and in terms of the law, that's calculated. The employer must pay an equivalent of 1 week's salary for every completed year of service. So that one is mandatory, but what you see in practice, you'll find that some companies might actually sweeten the servant's pay by offering something more than what the law calls for. But where there is no reasonable alternative to a retrenchment, definitely the company must pay the servant's package.
Is there any difference in terms of the law, retrenchments, and the size of a company? If you're a very small company, for example, do you have to follow exactly the same process as if you're, Eskom?
Well, there is a difference, Stephen. It speaks to what I outlined earlier on the large-scale retrenchment, where you are a big company in most cases. You will be following a Section 189 Capital A process. The main thing about that process is that it calls for a facilitation process. So it calls for a facilitator, an accredited facilitator, to be appointed to facilitate the consultation process. And it also has a time period to say that that particular process must run for at least 60 days before the company can issue notices of retrenchments. You will not find that requirement when we're dealing with small-scale retrenchments.
Okay. In a situation like this, it would seem that there are likely to be many cases and many retrenchments. Some of those are probably going to go to the CCMA. Some might even go to the Labor Court, for example. Do we have the machinery we need to deal with the situation? Could we find that there are long delays in the system?
Well, there's likely to be long delays in the system, but the CCMA seems to have built in a mechanism to address cases, and quite a number of cases. And judging by the communication that has been coming from the CCMA, it seems like they are expecting an increased volume of cases, and one will imagine that they will put measures in place to make sure that they can
they'll be able to deal with the increased volume of cases. But there's definitely going to be delays in having the matters resolved.
And then, just to be clear, I've been told in the past that the COVID-19, the virus, the lockdown, none of that actually affects the law on this. Is that right?
Definitely. None of the directives or regulations that have been issued in terms of the National Disaster Management Act have relaxed any of the requirements relating to retrenchment. So the requirements, they still stand, and they still, the employer still needs to comply with all the requirements as per the law.
Thabang Rapolenga, I do appreciate the time. Thank you. Director in Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr's employment practice on the line there. Your mediated conversation is around the issue of retrenchments, which I'm afraid is certainly very, very important during this time. Puka Masaromule is a labor lawyer from Masaromule Attorneys. He'll be with you in just a moment. You are with SAFM. It's 11 minutes to 9.